everyone, and welcome back to OTTB on Tap. I'm Neve.
And I'm Emily. Hey, Neve, what's on tap today?
Today's episode is a true fairy tale. We're talking to someone who just completed her first four-star at Kentucky at the end of April with her OTTB legend in the making. Allie Kuhn is here to chat about the incredible journey of Little Hale from the backside to the big leagues. And yes, we'll be talking Pink Saddle Pads too. I fell in love with their story watching the live stream and just had to invite her on to share it with all of you. Allie, welcome.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be on and to talk about Little Hale and all of his greatness and a whole lot of his shenanigans.
Yes.
Awesome. First off, can you share how your equestrian journey began? What kind of drew you into the sport of eventing in particular?
Yeah, so I started out doing 4-H, actually, not Pony Club. 4-H was pretty popular around here. My mom ran it. I grew up on a 40-horse farm in Plymouth, Wisconsin, which is where I'm at now. So we started doing all of your equitation, your hunter classes, all that jazz, and it just got really monotonous, and it got really boring, and it lost its fun. So then we dove into eventing and dabbled in that, and that was pretty expensive, right? And in being in the Midwest, you're traveling for these shows. These are not like an hour away. These are a couple hours away. So we would go a few times a year, and it was a pretty big deal, and we really just fell in love with it. So that really took off. I probably started venting when I was 12 on a really naughty pinto pony. And it was wonderful, right? Everyone should start eventing on a terribly naughty pony that if they steer it, they have a decent chance of getting over the jump, but possibly getting jumped on the ground. So that's where we started. My mom got my sister Whitney and I all the way up through preliminary. At the time I had gone through college, I had brought up three off the track at pre on my own. I'd buy him off the internet or from a friend for a couple $100 and see where they ended up. And I turned out with some really great horses. And by the time I finished college, I applied to work for, and I worked for her for 3.5 years. I took a thoroughbred with me and got him all the way up to prelim with her. And he told us he just wasn't really going to do anything, done so much. He looked, God, he had all the potential in the world. He was this big, beautiful chestnut, and he was supposed to take me all the places. And he said, no, thank you.
So that was kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I started grassroots with my own mom, and she got us all the way through prelim before Dorothy took me the rest of the way.
So we'll start doing it with your mom.
Yeah. And your sister also competed up through the 4-star level. Is that right?
Yeah. She had her horse Military Mind, and they did all the way through 4-star. He just got to that point. It started feeling more like a chore and an effort than fun for her. And actually, now they do Grand Prix Dressage.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow.
Yep, I actually rode him in some lessons when I was in Florida because I was having trouble with my flying changes on Hale. And so she was like, just pop on Milo. And I asked for one lead change and I got 7 in a row, tempi changes. And I was like, I don't know how to turn it off. I don't know
what to do. I don't know how to turn it off.
It just showed the versatility of it, though. He was a 4-star horse and now he's a Grand Prix Dressage horse. And that's really cool. He's really talented in the show ring. So yeah, so it's a family affair.
Oh, that's awesome. You've developed a reputation for retraining off-the-track thoroughbreds. What inspired you to focus on them specifically?
It was what I could afford at first. Mm. I wasn't a kid who could afford the trained horse already.
So I would talk to a friend of a friend who had something out in the pasture, and I had some money from selling my sheep. I think I bought my first thoroughbred out of a pasture.
Yep, and it was a broodmare, wow. Actually. Yeah, I know. Looking back, I'm like, oh, that was a gamble. But so I started there, and it just at the time was what I could afford because no one really had seen the value of the thoroughbred. They were like, oh, it's just a throwaway horse sitting in a field. You can have it basically for nothing. And that's where I started. But then when I went to Dorothy, like, that's all she did. That's right. All we had at the farm was thoroughbreds. And she's, I will advocate for this breed because this breed deserves to be advocated for. And so that's where I really learned that the thoroughbred was so special and so unique, especially like thoroughbred line to thoroughbred line. They change. They vary. Some of them are excellent dressage horses. Some of them are great jumping horses. Some of them just want to be trail horses. So they're very versatile. Yeah. Heck, I've seen people barrel race them and I'm like, you go. Like, you do you. So that's where I really learned to appreciate what they had to offer. And you've got to be very patient with them. You can't just take them off the track and then start putting them to where they need downtime. And so then I learned the value of the downtime and how to bring them back into being under saddle horses the right way. And that's so valuable. And then I actually worked at a racetrack for 8 months after my show horse got hurt. Yep. I talked to my vet and he was like, you know what? You want to make money? Go be a race rider. I was like, are you crazy? And I did it and it was opening. You understand why some of them are head shy. You understand why they don't really give the pressure because no one's ever really taught them how to give to a chain, right? They just kind of have a chain thrown on and they're just expected that you behave because there's a chain on you, but they don't understand that. And they're not, no one spends lots of time grooming them and loving them. They get a curry whisked over them. They get some tack thrown on. They get a bridle thrown on and away you go down to the track.
Yeah.
And so then when you get them back home and you start to work with them, you understand why they're a bit frantic in the cross ties or why they don't cross tie or why they don't understand how to stand for their feet. So it gave me a really great appreciation for what they've been through. And it showed me how to better work with them on this side of things. So I am so grateful for those 8 months. I only fell off one time.
Wow.
I know. And the horse almost knocked me unconscious, but it's fine. And it's ended up being a really good gate rider and actually got offered a job. At Keeneland as a gate rider. And I was like, that is flattering. And that's someone's dream. It's just not mine. I liked it. It was an adrenaline rush, but I was not crushed when I wasn't doing that anymore.
Yeah. We talk a lot about the different language that like thoroughbreds know so much. They do so much, but it's just different. It's just different than what your typical horse at a boarding barn. They have a totally different routine. So I think that's a knowledge gap there between people that get their first OTTB and they just, they get labeled as, oh, they're crazy or, oh, they don't know anything when really they know so much, but it's just a totally different.
And at the different pace. So they're used to like a frantic environment. And so when someone wants to buy them off the track and they, oh, I want it off the track and I want to spend all the time with it. I'm like, understand that he doesn't know how to just be groomed for 30 minutes. He needs it 4 minutes.
All right.
Let's go.
You're actually going to put him in a panic in the cross ties if you spend it.
And oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Understand why we're here. And you have to. You have to show them that's okay. It's a different style of life. And they get labeled as crazy because no one understands that you're speaking Spanish to a horse that's only ever been taught German. Right. They don't know.
100%.
You have to take that into consideration and you just have to laugh at them sometimes when they make silly mistakes and you just kind of go, hey, it's all right. You tried. Next time we'll do better.
Right. So, my retired racehorse project horse was like that when he first came home. He was like, if you weren't doing anything with him, he just started throwing all of his toys out of his playpen. Just let's do something.
I'm going to explode. Yeah. A lot of them are like that.
Yeah.
So let's rewind a little bit to the very beginning of you and Little Hale. Wanted to talk about John and Dorothy Kroll. You mentioned them, obviously, but from what I have read and heard that John was the one who originally restarted Hale. And of course, Dorothy really needs no introduction. She was a childhood idol of mine. She earned the silver medal at the World Equestrian Games in 1994 on her absolute legend of an OTTB, Molokai. I actually remember seeing them compete back in the day and just they had such an incredible partnership. But how did your connection with them come about?
Yeah. Dorothy was also my idol growing up. And I actually ran into her at a horse trial, Indiana Eventing Association. And I ran into one of her working students and we ended up talking. And I was like, this lady's really cool. I want to work for her. This sounds great. And I hadn't figured out what I wanted to do after college yet. I was probably a freshman in college at the time. So I was excited and I was intrigued and he was my idol and she was just a normal human being. And it was crazy because you put these people on a pedestal and then you forget that they just like horses too. So I ended up going to work for her and Hale was already being ridden by John by the time I got there. He was four, I want to say, because my show horse, Redden, was they're the same age. So John and I were on kind of the same journey with our two young horses. And I guess Dorothy had sat on Hale once because she got him from Benny Williams. He was supposed to be Benny's fun horse, but he tried to kill Benny. And she was like, I don't want to ride this. He's naughty. So Dorothy sat on him once and she was like, oh, this is John's flavor of horse. It's small. It's feisty. I'm too tall for this. I'm not riding this. So then Doug took him. And John started riding him. And John's not short either. John's still 6 foot something. So it was silly, tall man, and itty bitty little horse. But Hale's attitude and ego takes up the leg. So it really wasn't a problem. But we got to move up the levels together on our two young horses. And my horse was reliable in the dressage ring. And his horse was reliable in the show jumping ring. And they were both pretty reliable on cross country. So we went back and forth who going up the levels. And so I was grooming for Dorothy at the time. I was a working student. And occasionally I groom for John. And when John would go hunting up north, I'd ride Hale for him. And so Hale and I just had a fun relationship. It was nothing serious. I'd hack him. I think I had took a flat last night. And I was like, oh my God, he's so fun and so bad. Because he's a cribber and he's a biter and he's a menace in the cross ties. Like anytime he's in the cross ties, no one wants to go past him because he's terrible. Like he, and as a woman, you have to watch out for your boobs. He will try to bite you.
Yes.
Specifically the left side. It's just so disrespectful. And all of my grooms at shows who are family friends, they all know it's a whole thing. So I don't know. Okay to say on a podcast, but it's
no, for a thing. I love it.
I would groom for him a couple times. I groomed for him in his first 2-star at the park. And I had a fun relationship with Hale, but he was John's horse. Then my horse gets hurt. I work at the track. I ended up moving back to the farm at home because it was always my plan to slowly take over the farm from my parents. And now it's 100 acres and it's recognized horse trials and it's a whole thing now.
Oh, wow,
it's a whole horse park. It's a whole Disney horse park up here.
That's
so
amazing.
I moved back home and then that horse had a freak accident and died. And my old show horse had a freak accident. And when I'm talking freak accident, it's the kind of thing that your vet's, wow, we've never seen that. Essentially, one of my thoroughbreds got like gangrene.
Oh my God.
Like, how does that happen? No one knows.
Like, gangrene doesn't exist. Yeah,
he threw a blood clot in his foot from some infection and then his foot just died off his body. I thought I was treating scratches on his leg, but it was his skin sloughing off because it's like you that's can't awful. Save him. There's nothing I could do.
Yeah.
So freak things like that happen. And that happened three times. And I was like, I'm about done with this journey. I'm exhausted. And it wasn't specific to the thoroughbred. It was like, I'm done with the heartbreak of horses.
Yes.
This is too much. I'm so tired of starting over and falling in love with something and then it dying. Horrible death. I can't do it. So probably the last freak one had died April of 21 and John called me in June. And so he called me and I had always joked, like, when are you just going to give me Hale? And by then I knew Hale was sitting in a pasture in Florida because John had worked for Karen O'Connor and back in Biko's day and he'd done all the things and he'd done the horse show stress and he was just done, he's done doing that. And I totally respect that because we've all been there with our horse show careers where you're like,
oh yeah,
I just want a trail ride or not touch a horse. So he called me and he's like, hey, what are you up to? And I said, oh, haha, are you finally telling me you're going to give me Hale? And he's like, actually, that's why I'm calling. So that's how it all started 4 years ago.
That feels like fate, right?
It does, I feel like, except when you're terrified you're going to kill another horse. I was going to say no. I was going to say no. And I talked to my husband and him and John, good friends when I lived down there. And Lucas was like, I think you should do it. You love that horse. You've always loved that horse.
Have you seen my track record? Like, it's not great concerns to John. And you're not going to kill him. You're not going to kill him. I'll back him before I send him to you to show you that he is good to go. Yeah. So he did it and he shipped him with a horse and they drove him to Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. And I met them at a truck stop with my trailer and we unloaded Hale next to all these semis and unloaded him on my trailer.
And he was suspicious and skeptical of that. So that's how it started.
That's incredible. And so that was 4 years ago.
Yeah, June of 21 is when that started.
Okay. And so we had just gotten through COVID too and all of that. So the world was in a very crazy place. And now you have this really cool new horse.
Out of shape.
Right. He'd been sitting in a field for 2 years or something, right?
He had a gutter rein back.
Yeah.
He was a whale. Actually, oh no. What?
An infant.
Literally, I was like, when's the last time he was ridden? John's like, I don't know. I rode him a couple weeks ago. I was like, at a walk.
Hold on.
And I was like, do I need to sedate him to ride him or am I going to be fine? Those questions that you're like, I used to ride some feral stuff at the track, but that was ridden daily. This one.
How feral is he going to be? How tall is he?
He is 15'1".
Wow.
Perfect size.
It's wild.
15'1" and a half at the end of a shoeing cycle.
Okay.
If you're
lucky. So you get the horse home, right? And then did you still keep training with John or Dorothy at that point? Or
no, John and Dorothy live in Florida. Okay. And I live up here. I called Dorothy and I was like, so how do we get this back in shape safely? Because you don't want to do a tendon by just trotting up a hill or something stupid. Yeah. So she was like, okay, you need to walk. You need to take him and walk him
for a couple weeks. Way.
Like, go hacking, walk him uphill, get him
back into shape nature's way. Yeah. So that's what we did. And we also put him on a proper feeding program where he was maybe ed a bit. And he was on a bunch of supplements because he used to be like a little stress ball at shows. And he thought supplement and quiet essence and God knows all this stuff.
John sent me with 10 supplements. I felt like a pharmacist putting together his little baggies. I was like, a scoop of this, a scoop of
right.
that. Like, we are getting you off of these. This is ridiculous. I'm not paying for all these. So I think I hacked him for about a month. And uh-huh. he is rotten to hack. Absolutely terrible. He whirls to the right. Yep. He was pretending to be scared of dogs. He was scared mm-hmm. of trees. Like, he is rotten, especially if you hack him with company that he can get involved in the terribleness.
Oh, so, classic.
Like, I hack him alone.
Yes, I start a riot.
If he hacks with company, he's here to party, and it doesn't matter to him if you die in the process. So we do that. That's hysterical. It's not safe for anyone. Yeah. I've almost died multiple times, and I was like, this is ridiculous. So like a month of hacking, and then I put him into some flat work, and the first time I jumped him, he almost unloaded me rail. He exploded, and I'm talking exploded. Like, I write a lot of rank stuff. He almost got me off, and I was like, we will be starting at beginner, novice. Thank you very much. So that September, I took him to this first horse trial at beginner, novice. We warmed up for 45 minutes for dressage because he was wild. I was like, oh my God, stop running away with me. Sliding, stop. We won it. I don't know how, but yeah. Of course, that was our first show. And I was like, oh, we want to do. So it was a rough start.
That's amazing. It sounds a little bit like another off the track thoroughbred. I know, Emily.
Yeah.
A lot of them start that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Emily would be like, yeah, with my advanced horse, I would get on him before dressage and trot him for an hour.
Yeah, we would go on long trots and then put him away and then get on right before dressage and go basically right in the ring.
I love it. Little Hale's breeding is no joke. He's by Malibu Moon out of a quiet American mare. He was bred by Patrice J. Wolfson, and that's the same Patrice Wolfson who co-owned Affirmed. So that's some breeding royalty. And I was just looking up his dam sire, who is a horse named Siphon, who is a Brazilian racehorse. And Emily had a horse whose great-grandsire was also Siphon, which is interesting. And he was apparently one of the best Brazilian racehorses. So really just incredible breeding. Do you feel like he shows that quality of breeding in the way that he is, or maybe in his ego?
He does not know that he is small. He has no idea he is small.
I love it.
He's very proud. He's very proud of himself. And if I mess up, he is sure to let me know that I messed up. Now, God forbid he messed up, because then he just gets mad.
Yeah.
He's like a performance animal, and he's, how do you believe I hit that? And I'm like, okay, let's move past it. But yeah, he's serious about his job. I was going to go up to Kentucky, and we were going to get through it. And he was like, I'm actually here to compete. Stay out of the way. He's very serious about his job.
That's
and he's
cool.
a very sound thoroughbred. And I'm going to knock on wood really quick.
Yeah.
I am too. That's awesome. And especially because he's 16 now.
Yeah. Yep.
I didn't realize.
Going
I thought.
On four.
Yeah, that's incredible. So, of all the thoroughbreds competing at Kentucky this year, at least I think five had Malibu Moon in their pedigree close up. And we're curious, are there any thoroughbred lines that you look for in general with all of your experience, but especially now that you've had such success with Little Hale?
Not necessarily ones that I look for, but I know what I'm not good with. And I try to avoid Stormcats and Stormcat. I've had two Stormcats and they're incredible athletes, but they also are incredible at hurting themselves, like stupid injuries. But also I know that I have a fiery personality and I know that they have a fiery personality. Yeah. And so I know that I'm not always capable of being the bigger person.
Yep. I know. And Stormcat is such like a dividing issue. We talk about it a bit on here because some people just absolutely love Stormcats, and I don't think there's anything wrong with them. They don't, I've ridden them and they're fine. You can do it, but personally, they just don't always mesh with me.
I don't mesh with them. I think you have to know yourself and know what you're
right.
good at riding and what you shouldn't take on because you're not going to do it justice. I know I can't do a Stormcat justice. I know I can't. I know I'm not patient enough. And there's people out there that are, and I'm going to leave those horses for them. I'm not too proud to say I'm not good with those. That's the truth.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great perspective. Like, you can't match with every single horse out there.
Absolutely so, yeah, cool. not.
So what are Hale's biggest strengths? And then what are his biggest, I think you've mentioned a few of his challenges, but where would you put him there?
Pretty much always get himself out of trouble.
whether it's trouble awesome. I've put him in or it's trouble he's put himself mm-hmm. in.
Actually, the video you guys posted of me into the, I called it the wiener dog water. And yes,
the FBI guy did not appreciate me calling it that.
And it was Sensequin Cove.
I was like, wiener dog water. It's like,
I like that better.
He knew it.
He knew what I was talking about, did he not? But I got some very judgy looks. And yeah, I pushed for a distance and he's, no, I know that drop over there. So I'm going to put one more step in.
Luckily, I was sitting back, so we were fine. But he's just lightning fast with those reflexes. Mm-hmm. He can, and I think that's why all of us like thoroughbreds, because maybe warm bloods can't quite do that. And maybe a thoroughbred goes, I know how to get my feet out of trouble. Bye-bye. Yeah. And they pop off the ground. That, and he is very, God, he can turn so fast. He can turn so fast. I actually overturned him twice on course. Because I like sat and turned him and he turned really fast. And I was like, oh, we'll just slice this because I overturned, my bad. So he can turn really quick and he can get himself out of trouble extremely fast, which is so appreciated, especially at the upper levels, because it's impossible to go out there and be perfect every time. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, sure.
So you
I think
there
was, maybe it was coming out of that water where you jumped something in the water. Then you had to, it was like a big S turn. It was 200 jumps. And I remember, I think it was Sinead and John Holling that were doing the commenting, and they were like, they gasped a little bit thinking you weren't going to make it to the third element. And it was just clear that Kale was like, no, we got it. Yeah, okay. We blew the turn a little bit, but we're going to get there and just watch us.
Yeah. And he just, you can see him like, someone's like, he'd slip on his right hind. I'm like, no, he stuck that right hind out and sat into it and turned. Yeah. And that's when we'd been doing dressage lessons and he has to turn off your outside leg better. So we really worked on that. So I wouldn't turn him as hard as I used to have to turn him. And he turned really well. And he's smart that he like sat on that hind and turned really quick. And I was like, oh, and now be patient, Allie, because you did your job too. Sometimes. But actually, I was worried about that fence because the out was pretty impressive. And they were like, treat yourselves. And we shaved down 2 inches of brush. And we were like, oh, astounding. Because the first time I walked that brush, the backside of the brush was over my head.
Oh my God.
And we all know you're supposed to brush, but
he's not a real big fan of brushing brush. We all know you're supposed to brush, but yeah, not always. He's not a real big fan of brushing brush. So when he actually put the fifth stride in, I was pretty grateful because then he just crossed the brush and then turned really fast. And he's also always looking for what's next. Smart enough to know that it's not just straight line ever this level. So he's smart enough to know there's more coming.
I think OTTBs teach us just as much as we teach them. What has Hale taught you as a horsewoman?
He's probably taught me that I'm more capable than I think. Aww. I think I tended to underestimate my own skills quite a bit before this, probably because horses kept dying on me and making me think that I was just a bad horse person. Yeah. I'm just not a good horse person. I'm missing some mystery piece of care. And my vets were like, that's not it, Allie. So Hale was probably the first horse that showed me that I was capable of riding up to that level and I would even be good at it. I wouldn't just hack through. I always thought I would just get to intermediate and I was going to hack through it and it was going to be ugly, but I could say I did it. And he showed me that I was capable of so much more than that. And I could be detail oriented. I was perfectly capable. I just maybe hadn't known how to do it right. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I think I was struggled with the details a little bit as a kid. But I also had a horse who did not enjoy the details either. She didn't want to be groomed either. So we didn't. So he just showed me that I was capable. And I think that did wonders for my self-confidence, but also my own abilities. You know how it is. Once something starts to feel right, you can keep snowballing that. And then more things go right. And it took one horse showing me that I was capable for me to reach
believe
a little
in
bigger
yourself.
And dream a little bigger and wonder if maybe there was even more. Definitely that.
That's a great segue into my next question was there a moment or a turning point where you realized that, you know what, I think this horse could go all the way?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I had known he had gone intermediate with John once and a half, I want to say. I think they did a dressage and schooled for show jumping and then scratched at one. Okay. I knew he had gone intermediate, but I knew from talking with John that it had felt hard. It had felt very difficult. But I was like, okay, the horse is, we can get there. Like, he can be my horse that gets me really confident at prelim, and maybe we'll try an intermediate.
Yeah.
Probably when, I did a really great modified on him, and it was a tough modified, and it felt easy. And then we did prelims, and they just, it seemed like the jumps weren't big enough.
They weren't holding us. And I was like, this is unusual. I feel like most horses get up in front of a fence and they back up a little bit and sit down. And Hale was like, I can long spot all of these. And I was like, this is feeling a bit dangerous. And then we'd done a bunch of prelims and then we did the intermediate. And everything could just come into stride. And then I would look at the pictures of him and he thought that was the greatest thing since sliced bread. He was like, this is fantastic. These are huge and I love being in the air.
So that leads us up to your first four-star and only your third advanced. Is that right?
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about the experience from the inside out. What was it like riding down that center line?
Oh my gosh. I wish I could bottle the weekend up and just save it for a rainy day.
Yeah.
When Dorothy, oh God, who first mentioned it? I think I jokingly had said to Kathy, my coach, that maybe next year I'll aim for the four at Kentucky. And I was laughing, right? This was a big joke to me because I was never going to ride at Kentucky. I'm not that good. And she was like, why wait for your next year? And I was like, oh, she thinks I should wait 2 years. Okay. And she's, you could do it this year. And I was like, oh no. So we got there the 2 weeks beforehand. I just kept waiting for something to go wrong, him to go lame, me to fall off and break my ankle. Just waiting because there's just no way. I used to go with 4-H group and go watch Rolex as a kid. And we would ooh and ah and get all the autographs and shop and watch every cross-country ride. Somebody else gets to do that, not me. I'm not that girl. So I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. None of my before Kentucky. They were like, absolutely not. My horse is not going to be the one to break you. No, don't even look at him. Like, I'll just pay you to look at him. You can't get on. I was only allowed to give lessons. Like, any heavy lifting, everyone was like, no, Allie, you can't do that. I was like, I'm not pregnant. And they were like, it's the horse show, though. Dressage morning, I woke up and I was like, oh my God. The day before, I had just ridden in that big arena with all these other people. And like, we were riding in that ring and I'm looking around and I was like, oh my God, we are in here. We are doing this. So then, dressage morning, I did my pre-ride and I just remember getting ready in my dressage outfit. And I was like, holy crap. Like, I'm about to go canter down center line at, I always call it Rolex because it was Rolex forever. And 14-year-old me was screaming, like, so I told myself I'd keep a lid on it. And like, you will not lose your cool because Hale's not going to be allowed to lose his cool. So it's never your turn, as we know, to lose your mind riding. So we canter down center line. We do our test. And I was absolutely thrilled with the test because we had drilled so much flat work the 2 weeks prior. And I missed my first lead change because I just like, kicked him with my spur. And you can see how well that went in our test. He's really appreciative of that. Second one was much more prepared. So then we coming around at the end and we're coming down center and I was like, don't cry. You can't cry yet. And so I saluted and I looked up at the judge and that man, I don't know if he's never smiled in his life or he just doesn't care, but he could not wait for me to get out of the ring. Like he was like on with an X. I'm here for the 5-star, not you piddly 4-star people. Get out. I was like, thank him for his day. I was like, thank you so much. And he was like, go away. the judge at Evo was like, tremendous outfit. Tremendous.
Oh my God.
I was like,
shout out to the judge.
I was like, thank you so much. Oh, I felt like such a fangirl of this judge. I was like, oh my God, thank you.
That's so sweet.
I obviously, like, as soon as I walked past her, I was like, and now tears. And I'm not a crier by nature, but I cried so much during that week. Like, oh my God, I'm doing it. Oh my God. And like the 30 people in the stands cheered so loud for me. And I was like, oh my God. It felt like I was accepting a Grammy.
They're like, there's a speech required. Whoops.
I know. I was like, oh, ready to get one. Thank you. I want to thank my mom. Nothing. And I have to say, they always say walking down that lane to the arena is so iconic. And it is. Like, you're walking down. The film crew is there. I've got my squad in bright pink. Everyone, who are these people? What are they celebrating? And why are they so excited about dressage? I think you're, like, walking out. And there's all these photographers. And you're like, I just did that thing. Like, I just did that. It was so cool. And I think all of Area 4 was there. They, like, and they're like, hey, what are you? And I felt like,
that's awesome. I love it so much.
I wish I could bottle that exact feeling.
I think there's probably something really incredible about that first time at that level in an iconic place. Like you said, a place that you grew up going to and you're never going to replicate the feeling of the first time. And I think that's so special.
It is.
So how did you feel after walking the course? How many times did you walk it? Did you have anyone walking with you?
Yes.
First time I walked it, I took my sister with me. So Whitney was my star groom, and she is a phenomenal groom. If she were for hire, I would suggest her for anyone. I paid her in hugs and merchandise. I said, I want to walk it with just you first, because my sister, who has run this level, and while she hasn't in a while, she can look at things from an experienced perspective. And her and I had walked my first intermediate together too, and it just worked. So we walked it together, and we like discussed it. And, okay, this is what I think I'll have to do here. And okay, I know there might be a crowd for the 4-star, so I might want to maybe take the long route here, because I don't know how he's going to feel it jumping into the crowd. We've never jumped in front of a crowd before, so maybe. No. But he's run here a billion times, so maybe he won't care. And so we just talked, and I looked at everything and felt like, yeah, I don't think there's anything down here I can't do. I think it's hard, and there's some long routes that maybe we'll take if things are a little hairy. But I feel like we can do this. And then I walked it with Dorothy the next day, and she was much more worried than I was. I was like, I continue to not feel worried. And she was like, I'm worried that you're not worried. I feel like that's about that. And then I walked it with Kathy, my other coach, and I like to walk with both of them because they have such different perspectives. Dorothy is a really aggressive ride. You can do that direct cornering. You got that. When I was like, my last outing at Tiernova, maybe I wasn't as good of a rider as I could have been. So maybe I'm not sure. And Kathy is one who's a bit more, I think you should give him a good educational ride here and you should be a bit more patient. So I don't want to say she errs on the side of cautious and careful, but she definitely makes me check in and go, yes, you're a good rider, but you're also new to this level.
Yeah, you're still green in advance and now you're at a 4-star, which you deserve to be at. But how can you make it the best 4-star for him and for you that you both can walk away from it? Satisfied? Yeah. So I like to walk with both of them because it makes me bounce ideas back and forth about how I can do it. Also, okay, guess what? You planned on riding Dorothy's line here, but he actually landed on Kathy. Okay, I've got a plan. Yeah, boom. I really like that. And that was really helpful.
And then Saturday morning, I walked it by myself at 7 a.m. and I put big headphones on. I just played music and got in a groove. But also because there's a lot of people out there in the morning and they're excited to see a rider walking the course, or there's Philip Dutton walking right in front of you and you just want to stay in your own lane. It's really helpful to just go do it one last time and you make a decision. What is your plan at this line? You've been told multiple options, but what is the plan? What's plan A? Then what's plans B, C, E, all that stuff.
Right.
Because you do have to think that way at this level, sure, because there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong. You can hang a leg midair and land in a heap and figure out how you're going to make it to B, and things you don't want to happen, but they're horses and they don't get to walk the course first. So you got to have a plan.
That's great advice. So you're right. Cross country really just looked amazing. How did Hale handle that course? And were there any moments out there where you just had to take a deep breath and just trust him?
I felt very calm leaving the start back. I'm a bit neurotic normally. And my first advanced, I had done a lot of like self-help Mel Robbins podcasts, her books, reading them. I just how to stay really level and stay in my own lane and stop worrying about the chatter. Because when you want to take on something like this and you've only gone to advance before that, there are definitely people who are like, hey, what are you thinking? And I wanted to make sure that I kept that out of my focus. So I was in a really good headspace. My first advanced, it's what I had done. And I was calm the entire weekend to the point where my groom was like, are you okay? And I was excited because you seem very quiet. And I was like, I'm ready. Yeah. And that's how I felt that morning. I jumped five cross-country fences. And Dorothy and Kathy were quiet, but they were like, that's it. You're ready, Allie. That's it. And my sister walked me to the start box because I was like, I only want you in start because I need one calm person. I can't have a crowd of nervous. I need one calm. And so she walked me there and we cried a little bit together because we were both geeking out. That little 14-year-old us was, oh my God, we were doing this because we were doing this. It wasn't just me that went to Kentucky. My group went to Kentucky. We went to Kentucky. So my sister was riding Kentucky too. And I just remembered saying to her, I was like, I've got this. I can do this. I absolutely believe I can do this. I knew that 4AB was going to be an influential question because we walked long and it was up a hill. And so I knew if I did 4A and B that the rest of the course would feel better. And it came early.
And it got a ton of people. And I remember seeing you come around and just nailing that and realizing the people that came before you that couldn't get to it. It was pretty incredible. I'm not sure how much of that you knew before you left or if you were probably in the warm-up or whatever. Like you say, the chatter comes back and you're like,
I stayed away from it this time. made a mistake at Terra Nova. They had a really big jumbotron in warm-up.
Oh,
so
man.
You got to see
that's rough.
You think it's going to help you, though. To be fair, you're like, oh, I can see how these things ride. Great. You can also see how things go wrong. And that will get in your head and that will get in your way.
Make you get off your plan.
Exactly. And that happened to me at Terra Nova and I doubted myself and I had a stupid run out early because I was so busy worrying about something later on course that I didn't ride what was right in front of me. And so I learned and I was like, okay, if there's a Jumbotron at warm up, I'm not watching it. Thank God they didn't have one. Woohoo.
Yeah.
So I had no idea that 480B had been a problem.
Yeah.
I just assumed for me, it was going to be a lot of work. I was like, okay, I know me. I know this question. It's going to be hard. It's up a hill. And everyone's like, he's 15 hands. You worry about a stride. Never. I never worry about him covering the ground. He covers ground so easily. It's not even a problem. So came up there. My road to my line. And once I got to my spot, I just moved him up that hill. And I was staring through that corner. There was a tree I was looking for. And I was like, tear that tree down. And he just ate up the distance. And you see the video of him. He actually jumped me out of the tack over that corner. And it was a huge corner. And so anyone that's, does he ever run out of jump? No. I run out of springs in my knees, actually. He jumped that and he landed and he was like, oh, this is awesome. And the crowd went wild and it didn't throw off his focus because there was a crowd there. And I was like, that was my testing point for if you're going to be affected by crowds. And he never felt rattled. And I was like, all right, I'm going direct at the coffin then.
Yeah.
Because the question was, if he's rattled there, do you go long at the coffin so that he has more time to assess? But also when you do that, you're asking him to do a skinny on a turn and it's really distracting. And sometimes it actually makes it harder. So I wasn't keen on doing the long route, but if he was shocked by the crowds, I'm not going to ask him to jump a skinny into crowds.
Sure. Well, there's going to be tons of people at the coffin.
There's going to be tons of people. Exactly. I looked at the coffin and I was like, there's going to be a ton of people right here. Yeah. There's no way.
The last couple of years, the coffin again came up really early on the course and it was incredibly influential, especially on the 4-star, I think. Last year, maybe? Yeah, last year. Yeah. It came off that turn where those brushes were at 4A and B, and it really just got people.
Yeah, it did. And so maybe I schooled those at home. I had a plan. I set up some terrifying stuff for myself at home, like to the point where I had a run out on something I built myself. And I was like, oh, my haps, you've built something too hard, Allie. I think it helped me because I, in a way, scared myself at home and made myself ride better. So then when I got to the coffin, I was like, listen, you better be on that canter. You better have your eye on that cabin. And then as you're in the air for that cabin, you're looking at that chevron.
Yeah.
And he was like, yep, no problem. And Dorothy said, if he's scrambling at the ditch for any reason or he sniffed over the cabin, pull him right and go to the other cabin to the corner. Yeah. You can make that decision, but you have to do it well.
Yeah.
Right. And he was so on it. So I just looked at that brush and scoot, scoot, away we go. And I have to say, when we landed from that and went to gallop away, the crowd cheering, he was like, oh my gosh, they're here for me. And I was like, yeah, they are, big man. That's you go. Cool. You earned that. You earned that cheer. You go. And he loved that. He was like, and he always galloped with his ears back. So he was like, oh, it's so great. I was like, you are.
I love that so much.
Yeah. They asked me, what percentage of your plan did you ride? And I said, about, I think 85 to 90% of my ride went exactly the way I walked it, which is huge. I was also slow and careful. Normally can make time, and I didn't aim for that today. What's your first 4-star at Kentucky? Maybe you just focus on riding well and not making the time.
Take the pedal off a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and he also picked the pace out of the box himself. He was like, this is the pace I want to go. And I was like, I'll be back here showing you the way. So
that's really cool.
He still I just took my time a bit more this time and wanted to be really accurate.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, not to age myself, but I actually rode at Kentucky in 1999 on my OTTB, who was 19. Yeah. I was 19. He was not 19.
Oh, my God.
Back in the long format days. But I remember even then, the crowds were very impressive. I'd never ridden in front of crowds like that. But I felt like I was able to just have this, weird tunnel vision and, just able to focus on the jumps. I was curious if you were able to do that or if it was distracting for you at all versus...
No.
Your horse was okay with it.
My fellow trainer and friend, Megan Maranovich-Burdick, she actually called me and she was like, hey, let's talk. You wanted advice, right? Because she's ridden at Kentucky twice. One year, she rode in 21 where there were no crowds. And she said, 22, there were crowds. And she said she had not been prepared for that. So she got distracted and had to stop. And she's the only thing I can tell you is do not look at the crowd. Lane and focus on your job. Focus on your job. Do not look at the crowd. At any point this whole weekend, do not look at the crowd. I know it sounds silly, but that was probably the most influential thing I heard all weekend. Because you want to look at all the people cheering for you. You want to, oh my God, I'm at Kentucky. I want to look.
Yeah.
And I didn't.
And
I
was lost.
Eyes between the ears the whole ride. Eyes between the ears. And the only time I ever really noticed the crowd was when I was coming from those double corner brushes around to that oxer and then that up to that brush. the crowd there and with the S turn, you almost couldn't see your path for a second. Mm. Where I was like, that's when I was like, wow, that's a lot of people. And then I was like, back on it.
Ignore
the
that.
The open path is there. Just follow it. But yeah, you have to tunnel vision. You really do.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like show jumping is where it really got me, where I was just like, oh, now I can see them all at once.
I felt that. I didn't look, but he did. And then when we came down to the triple line, that's where you had to turn toward the grandstand to make it. And I was dead on staring down that line. And you actually see him like through the triple line drifting left. And he just tinked each one. And it's because his eyeballs were literally like, are you seeing this? Are you seeing? Right, I was like, right. Are you seeing like these in front of us? And like he jumps, normally goes clear. The first time it was totally me because I was like, oh my God, we're at Kentucky and we're show jumping. And I came underpowered. And then I was like, lesson learned. Keep your life together. And then I was great. And he just was like, are you seeing this? And I was like, are you seeing the 4-foot fences in front of you? Because it feels like
they're not.
But then he like landed on that and he was like, oh my gosh, sorry, mom, I'm back. And I was worried because we're at 4 rails by then. And I was like, oh my God, we're going to get CR'd and show jumping.
Yeah.
I keep like coming around to the Rolex fence, which is right next to the grandstand. And I was like, please.
Just leave it
to jump hail and not the crowd.
I think I texted Emily at one point. I was like, the 4-star show jumping is just cruel. I was like, you go from jump 3 towards the in gate, away from the in gate, and along. He was like, it's just mean.
It's rough. And how often do we jump in front of a grandstand of people? Is never no rocking horse. I think there's 4 people watching me show jump. Right.
Right.
And I had a little bit of a crowd, like a mimosa hour. Situation. Like, yeah. So that was probably the biggest group we've ever in front of.
At Jersey Fresh at the New Jersey Horse Park, they have a covered arena with, it's like a grandstand, and they love putting a combination hard up against the rail. And the horses always turn the corner and they're like, because they'll have the food vendors in there and little booths and stuff. And I'm like, you guys, that's just mean.
It's mean. What does he ever see that he doesn't know? It's fine, though. It's not like without those 16 penalties, like winning it, right? I mean, I was picturing myself ending the weekend on 150 with some stop on cross country and like a disaster of a dressage.
But with like a happy, healthy horse at the end as well.
And I was thrilled with a 77. Yeah. And I was like right in the middle of the pack. I think there were supposed to be 58 starters. I don't know. I was like, I'm thrilled. So we'll take it.
As a newcomer to Kentucky, and we're just talking about all of the atmosphere and everything that was going on there, how did you feel to be riding alongside such big names, the likes of Harry Mead and Boyd, I guess?
I'm only joking about that because we have so many big name riders in our area.
Yeah.
You get really used to them.
But I definitely get a little goofy around some of the international riders.
I definitely walked up to Michael Young at the rider party the night before and talked to him.
You did?
Yeah.
Did you ask him for any advice or anything? Or did you guys just not talk about horses at all?
Walked up and I said, hi, welcome back. We're really excited to have you. And I'm a stranger. He doesn't know me. And he actually turned and talked to me for a little bit. And yeah, then I just walked away and I just loved it because he's a human too. And we all just love horses. We all like horses. It's just the people who like horses and they're all at a really expensive horse show. And maybe none of them dreamed of being here today. And maybe some of them have always dreamed of being there. And we're all just in one room together.
They're all just horse people too. Yeah. They're all just like little boys and girls who never grew up from riding horses. And he was very normal.
I was saying this to somebody recently because William Fox Pitt taught a clinic up here a couple months ago and I photographed it last year. And then this year they needed somebody to pick him up from Maryland. So I drove down and picked him up. So the poor guy was trapped in a car with me for 3 hours. And I had interviewed him the year before for the podcast and he was just so gracious. And he's just, thoroughbreds really shaped so much of his upper level career. And I think he feels in a lot of ways that he owes them a lot of his success and everything like that. But we talked about online bullying and what it means to create a legacy and biological clocks of women and
deep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's me though. Let's get into all of the cool topics. And I like the next day, it was just funny because I think he was just, and we talked about horses a little bit, but I think he just actually liked the fact that I was like, I know who you are and I think you're awesome. But also I want to know you in other ways besides the fact that you used to be the number one rider in the world.
So we touched on this a little bit. We jumped ahead a bit, but going into the final day of the competition for the show jumping, how were you feeling? How did he jog up and all of that stuff? And just what were you really hoping for?
He jogs up ready to go cross country again.
Good thoroughbred.
You don't realize how many people are taking pictures and crap because it's like deafening shutter sounds. It's like you turn to jog back. There's a reason they explode. Yeah, yeah. You can't. You're leaving. And so I was like, please don't run away with me.
Can't stop you. You're That's awesome.
I was so happy about that because there'd be nothing worse than having a great cross-country day and then my horse being broken. I would just feel terrible. I feel awful. So I was feeling pretty good about it. And then I went into jumping, feeling very logical about the situation. We're in a big environment we've never been in.
We're in a big environment we've never been in. Deep jumps are big. It's only our third advance. Big and expecting. So I walked in with
realistic expectations of my own capability. I know I'm perfectly capable of jumping a double clear. I'm not sure that I was capable of having a perfectly level head. If my horse having a perfectly level head on day, what, like 5,000 of stress and high pressure and people hopes and dreams feeling what they're carrying along with you. So I knew it was probably unlikely I would have a clear ground just because I knew that there's no way I can keep a lid for every fence. Yeah. I was shocked that we had four. I looked like that. I did not see that line biting us in the, but like that I was like, okay, noted. Next time we jump in front of 11,000 people, keep your inside leg on a little. Like they asked me in an interview, like, what would you do to fix that? I was like, find 11,000 my best friends and have them watch me jump.
Yeah, sure. So I feel like it's safe to say that the crowd and your crowd probably went wild for you after your big completion. Were you aware of the support from the crowds that you were getting and your fan club?
I think that I originally put out a GoFundMe because I wanted to go to Kentucky, but I'd been in Florida 5 weeks longer than I'd been expecting to, because once we decided we were going to do it was that I needed to stay in Florida longer. I needed to stay where my coaches were, and all that is great, but I'm not making money doing that. That if I told people they would be helping me get to Kentucky, people were probably going to be pretty likely to help me because they want to be part of that. 92% of the equine community will never that level. Want to part your journey in way? I can't do it alone. Like getting here, not just me by myself. It happened. There is a billion people behind me. There's so many people behind the scenes. There's people that I can call when I was having a down day where I was like, do I even have any business going? And they were like, shut up. You know yourself. Like there's plenty of people who would sit down and have a glass of wine with me when I talk about, oh my God, I'm going to go to Kentucky. And so when I put that GoFundMe out and I was like, what's happening? I had a dream, but I at this point, and I want to go to Kentucky. Will you help me get there? And that. It happened so fast, it went beyond that. And I was so grateful.
Will you help me get there?
And obviously you didn't pay for the trailer I had to buy because Hale in January, and he tried to do a cartwheel in my trailer and I thought he was dead. So I buy a trailer when I was in Florida. I had to get new saddles because mine stopped fitting and my rep wouldn't do anything about it. So I switched saddle brands and I had to buy new saddles. I'm so far there right now, but I went to Kentucky. So it was incredible. And I did not expect that many people to be at Kentucky for me and the number of people that reached out. And they were like, I went to this year because I know somebody going and I actually have talked to her and I know her and I've seen her write 1,000 times. And I was so shocked. And so then my client was like, I think we should get a little Hale store going because then you can get some profits off of that. I didn't know how many people actually bought them until I guess I watched the video of cross country because I didn't look out at the crowd and I saw just the pink everywhere.
Sea of pink.
The sea of pink and pink people just sprinting fence to fence. And just all the people that sent me pictures of them at home with their little Hale gear on, with me in the background on cross country, and all the people that sent me texts and all the people that sent me messages and all the Instagram videos I shared in and strangers sending me videos on Facebook. It was wild. I just cried. I just sobbed because I was like, I cannot believe that was so electric. And the crowd just got louder and louder the further we went down the course. And at one point, I think I was the only person on course.
Yeah, you got a lot of live streaming coverage, I think, because of that, which, you know, is unfortunate for the other riders. But I was like,
right for me. Yeah.
When I finished that last fence, like it was, you would have thought I just
won the Stanley Cup.
It was so loud. And I guess my crew, oh my goodness, my crew, like my half my barn, which we have a pretty sizable barn here, half my barn was out there. And I guess they were all at a Jumbotron watching me finish. And they said there was just a crowd by the Jumbotron. They said it was the coolest thing to be part of because they all felt like they were riding it with me.
For all of the OTTB riders listening or little girls and little boys that might be watching
from Kentucky who are dreaming of the upper levels. What's your advice and what has to be in place for a thoroughbred to succeed at this level?
I think there's two things. A, you have to give yourself permission. I ran around Kentucky in a smile and I probably had more fun than anyone there because I didn't have an owner. I had to impress. I'm not trying to make it onto some Olympic team. I just got the opportunity to go out and enjoy the hard work I'd done on my horse. And I did it from the Midwest.
Yeah.
And I did it from the Midwest. And you can do it from the Midwest. And you do not have to have an owner behind you.
You can just be really determined and you find people that are willing to be. Some of my greatest coaches live here in the Midwest. My dressage coach is in Illinois. I drive an hour and 45 minutes.
Wow.
And if he's gone to the Olympics or done all these things.
When I called her and said, hey, will you come coach me at Kentucky? She jumped up and down and the screaming and was like, absolutely. And her whole barn of people were so excited for me. You're in the Midwest and people just don't either look for them or they don't know they're there. And
you don't have to be some really wealthy individual. You can just be really stubborn and have a dream. And you can go do it. You just got to really want it.
Yeah. And I feel like getting to achieve that big dream that you had as a girl, it just sets the framework for the rest of your career in a way where like you're always going to feel accomplished because you reached this goal that you probably never really thought was going to happen for you for so many different reasons. And I just think now everything else is just like the icing on the cake. Obviously, we'll get into this in a little bit about your future plans, but I just think, it's amazing.
And find coaches that understand thoroughbred.
Yes, we always say that as well. That is
the biggest thing I have figured out. Find people who understand the thoroughbred and they understand.
And like them.
Find people that love thoroughbreds because those are the people that I've ridden with tons of people. And there's some people that just don't understand thoroughbreds or they don't like them. Those people are not going to help you get where you want to go because they don't understand what they're working with.
Yeah.
I found people that understand thoroughbreds and they understand how they work and they understand when they start to get fry in their brain. And they know how to work them through it. And those are the people that have helped me get where I needed to go because they're like, oh, just pat him and tell him he's silly and try it again. Don't discipline him because we all know if you hit a thoroughbred, you better be ready for the ride of your life. I found people who were patient. I found people that understood my horse and understood me and my own insecurities on my horse. And find yourself a gritty thoroughbred. Find yourself a war horse that ran 1,000 times. That horse is going to probably vet like crap on x-rays. That horse knows how to push through stuff.
Yeah.
And that horse is an athlete and he wants it. Those are the horses that will take you places. Not every single one of them, but God, your war horse, they're so underappreciated because people are like, he's got bone chips or he didn't flex great. Who else wouldn't flex great? Me. Terrible. The day I broke a nail, I know this is ridiculous. I broke an acrylic nail and my finger feels like it's about to fall off right now. I have a Band-Aid on it. Like I am pathetic, but I could still run around Kentucky right now with that finger if I needed to. Because I'm gritty. So I'm a horse that's gritty. And people just don't appreciate the gritty war animals that they are.
Yeah.
That horse is telling you that he can push and he can handle it.
Yeah. We like to say that war horses especially, the hardest job they're ever going to do is be a racehorse. Even outside of being a 5-star eventer, the hardest thing on their bodies physically and the demands of racing are way harder than anything. So if they can retire sound and get a little maintenance if they need it, they're going to be up for the job and their brains are there already. They've got the work ethic. It's just, I don't know. I just think there's nothing really better than a good thoroughbred. Speaking of that, do you feel like Little Hale is helping shift the narrative around thoroughbreds at the top level? Because
I hope so. I think he caught
the eye of a lot of people.
He did. As someone who thought they were going to just hack their way through Kentucky, that video on Instagram that the Framed Equestrian posted, which actually Kathleen Stram is someone I know and is a friend of mine. So it's funny, her and I have been texting about the video. That thing has been watched like 60,000+ times and shared.
That's amazing.
And the comments on all of these posts and everything, people being like, suddenly a thoroughbred. And I'm like, what are other people riding? Are they not all riding thoroughbreds? There's things that
they're missing out.
They are missing out. And if they love their warm blood, good for them. I don't want to kick for 7 minutes around a cross-country course.
Right.
I want to have to pull because, my God, we need to slow down.
I want to contain energy. I want to be going through the finish line and my horse to keep going. And I have to say, we're done. Because that's what I do. I'm like, we're done. We're done.
And there's got to be more. We are done. That is what I want to ride. And I hope people watch him go and we're like,
wow, what is he? And they looked it up and were like, oh my God, he's literally a small, scrappy thoroughbred. Like, I hope that all those people who post when they want a horse, they're looking for a horse and they say, no, I hope that it changes their mind. I hope that they look at that video and they go, maybe I should consider a thoroughbred. And like, maybe it would, they can train it themselves, but maybe they should find someone who can train it for them and then they can ride it. I don't know, but I hope it makes people wonder why they've never considered getting a thoroughbred before.
I think it would be really funny if you have a picture at all of him when he first came off of his extended vacation and sent it to us, because there used to be floating around pictures of Donner and then also Palm Crescent from their listing photos, and they would just circulate on the internet every once in a while when these horses would be at the upper levels at a big event or whatever, and they'd be like, would you buy this horse? And all I could think of is like this fat 15-1 thoroughbred that's a cribber.
Spicy.
Spicy. Malibu Moons, which can be more of a pro ride.
We tremendous know. Cribber. Committed like, cribber. Committed yeah, cribber.
Like, and you know how many people would say no? One, because he's a cribber. Two, because he's 15-1. Oh my yeah. goodness. I think that's just the best height ever.
That's why he got passed over so much, though. I was the fourth person they called about Hale when John was like, he's just sitting in a field, but he's like a good jumper. Does anyone want to ride him? And people were like, he's naughty. He bites. He's a cribber. He's in general just a little shit. He's a menace. Right. And I'd have him no other way. He is not a kid's ride. He will never safely pack children around beginner Navid because he's going to feel that the pace that should be done at is probably advanced speed. He's not cuddling in the crosses. He hates being groomed and curried. He's rotten and I love him to pieces, but so many people pass him up because they're like, he's small and insignificant. Yeah, I know. Everyone now is, he's great. I'm like, did you know that when I was getting run away with being, did you know he was great?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of upper levels riders say that the good ones always have a little bit of feral in them. So
they're rotten. They're rotten. I know, you just have to know how to channel that. Hey, when I'm on him and we're running cross country, I'm his best friend. As soon as I got off of him, he was like, where's Whitney? Where's my emotional blanket? He wanted nothing to do with me on the ground. And I was like, listen, man, to each their own this weekend. I was drinking kitty cocktails all weekend, like no alcohol because I couldn't stomach it. And he wanted to hang out with my sister.
That's fine. I'll just get on you. We'll go.
Yeah, I feel bad. I'm just like handing him off. And they're like, oh, Michael Young always does stuff with his horse. I'm like, I will get eaten in the butt.
I ripped my left boob off and I don't need that right now.
He bit me in the butt the one time I tried to put his back on track scrim sheet on. And I was like, I'm done hanging out with you. You're mean to me. And then my sister came in the stall and he was all ears forward and cuddly. And I was like, you never cuddle ever, you rotten animal.
They are outrageous. I love it so much. You have demonstrated that success in eventing isn't limited to those with vast resources. How do you hope your journey with Little Hale influences aspiring riders who feel like they might lack the means to compete at the higher levels? I do know you touched on this a little bit, but you took a chance on a little horse that, you know.
Yep. I'm a risk taker though too. Yeah. I will say that about myself. I will try something. I will try it and not know if the outcome is going to be great. But I'm also scrappy in the way that like I baked French macaron cookies and sold them to pay for gas to my horse shows.
There's a will, there's a way that's beautiful. And I rode horses. I didn't necessarily want to ride. And I took on things and I stressed myself out. But making the pennies count, was it tough working a job in Florida at the tech shop while also having two horses of my own down there and having a sale horse down there for a client? Yeah, it was super freaking stressful the entire time. Like this year has been the most stressful year of my entire life, but it has been so worth it. It has been so worth it. And it's not always going to be that. Now it's not that stressful. I think my next outing, I'm going to go probably get run away without an intermediate and it's going to be glorious. But you just have to be really crappy and you have to be really willing to be gritty and just try things and go after. If you want to do it, you'll figure it out. You'll figure it out. I wanted to go and all it took for me was two coaches who are pretty freaking tough and old style and are not likely to let people just move up. It took them both being like, Ellie, you should go run around a 4-star. And I was like, crap. If they think I can, then I will find a way to do it, knowing that the entry alone is $1,000. And I was like, I'm going to find a way. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm going to figure it out. And I did. And I have some really wonderful people in my corner that I was like, hi, do you love me? Will you lend me some money? I will give you lessons for a year for free. Please let me. And they were like, of course, you're indebted now. Yeah, indebted. And they will never let pay them back.
Yeah.
it's like anything in life. If you want it, you'll figure out a way to do it. I'm super broke right now. I can't tell you how broke I'm right now. It's terrible because I'm paying for all of this, but I can say that I ran around Kentucky, which little girl me would have never believed she could do. Yeah. And now my goal is can you do it again with a different one?
Can you? Or have you learned enough skills to do it again?
Yeah.
I've got a really cool baby horse who looks just like Hale. It's terrifying. And she's got a really big ego. And she's got a really big jump. And
that'll be exciting.
Maybe her and I'll go there. Or maybe fate was that I only get to go once. I don't know. But yeah. I'm going to try. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
This kind of leads into our next question. Not to bring it down, but after facing, you were talking about the heartbreaking losses that you went through with your several horses earlier and that you had actually considered stepping away. Do you have any kind of advice or what sort of inner strengths or support systems, or do you have any kind of advice for others that are facing a similar spot in their life or similar challenges?
Two things. One, I got the word resilient tattooed on my shoulder. A horse actually flipped over on me once years ago and destroyed my rotator cuff and my arm off. So it was a reminder to that shoulder to remain resilient because your girl's not sound.
I'm very unsound. When that cliche thing where everyone's, oh my God, when you feel like nothing can go right and then you finally stop trying, something finally goes right. Ugh, it's true. Just when I felt like maybe I should just groom horses for the rest of my life and not try to show, or that moment where I was like, I don't really know what I'm going to do because I'm clearly not meant to show. That's when Hale came into my life. Mm. And that is the most cliche crap you can say because you're like, really? That's what she's going to say? That's not helpful. If you want something, it's going to be really hard. You're going to have horses that you think are going to take you places and they just don't, because not every animal that's gifted wants to do it. And you have to make peace with that, because you can't make horses jump jumps.
You can't make a horse who doesn't want to jump go around a 4-star. It's not going to happen. So you have to be willing to struggle, and you have to be willing to fail. And you have to be willing to be like, I learned something from it, but I'm not going to quit. But you have to accept that failure is there to help you and something greater is coming.
And I always told myself, like, I'm a religious person. So for me, I was like, God, I don't know why these horrible things keep happening to me and you keep taking horses out of my life. I have faith that something good is coming. And I just kept telling myself that because I don't believe in bad days. I believe in bad moments, and there's always something good about every day. Even when my horse died, I was like, I still gave a really great lesson that day. Gave a really great lesson. So while I had a really bad moment that day and it was really influential, it wasn't a bad day. So when you have terrible things happen, you have to make sure that you have the mental strength to not let yourself get in a rut. Because once you're in a rut, it's really hard to get out. And I'm not keen on wallowing. So I just never let myself get in a place. And I was like, nope, something's going to stick. Something's going to stick. I'm going to keep trying because something's going to work. And it did. Yeah. But I think a lot of people probably called me crazy. They're like, this girl just does not know when to quit. And that area around me saw me like, you struggled for so long. Like, you deserved this success. And I was like, I struggle with, because I don't think anyone deserves anything like that. No one deserves to have their horse die. That's awful. But
of course,
one person's struggle shouldn't have a greater reward than someone else's. So yes, well, I had earned it. Yes, I had a wonderful horse put in my lap, but I also knew what to do with him, because I think we were both a bit mad and underestimated. And so I think we both thrived off each other.
Yeah.
He'd been passed over a lot, and I don't want to say passed over, but I'd had opportunities leave me often enough. And I think we both had a bit of chip on our shoulder and something to prove. And I think
that you both had something to prove. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we did. I think we both were like, you know what? No one expects us and no one thinks anything of us. And we're going to show them that we are something. And I think that kind of hate fire fueled me for a long time. And now I'm like, okay, but I also am going to enjoy this journey because I don't know how long it's going to last. And I want him to retire here someday and just be grumpy until the day he dies. I want that for him, because he deserves to just be mad at everyone. I love that for him. He's only mad at me mostly, but he's got a fat paint friend out there and they're super happy. And I want him to retire with me sound and live out his days ruining people's lives. I want that for him.
You know what? You need to put him with a little naughty Shetland and they can just take over the world together.
We have a naughty pony and I refuse to put them anywhere near each other.
Because they would. Just
plotting to kill you.
Oh my God. It's too much.
That's so funny.
Okay, so we have a little segment here. It's a quick fire.
Okay.
10 questions.
Let's
do it. We've given it to a couple of other riders. So you're just going to say the first thing that comes to mind. No overthinking. Emily, go first.
Okay.
So if you could ride any horse in history, who would it be?
Molokai. Dorothy's horse. Hands down.
Good answer.
That was okay. Too easy.
I know. What's your go-to cross-country hype song?
Crab Rave by Noisestorm.
Hold on, I'm writing that down.
All right. Favorite post-event treat for you and for Hale?
Ooh, that is a... For Hale, it's the driest, nastiest treats you can buy from Tractor Supply. Those are his favorite snacks, of course. Stale. Hands down. Don't give him some bougie treat. He does not want that. And he wants some nasty thing that you would never dream of having.
For me, it's probably cheddar popcorn, smart food. I can polish off a bag of that, no problem.
Those are good. Yeah.
So good.
If you were not an inventor, what do you think you'd be doing?
I would open a bakery and sell French macaron cookies.
That is so specific, and I love it.
If Hale were an actor, who would he be?
Obviously, Matthew McConaughey.
Oh my God. Pre-ride ritual or good luck charm.
Good luck charm. My dress pad that I really desperately need to replace is the swallowtail. It's too small, probably cuts into his withers. But one time I wore a different pad. I got a bad dressage score. I need to retire it.
It's time. But I wore it at Kentucky and I was like, listen,
I love how superstitious eventers are. It's one of my favorite things.
We're like hockey players. It's really bad. Someday I'm going to replace this.
You know what would be amazing is if eventers did that thing that like baseball players do and they
didn't wash it.
They grew their mustache out.
Can you imagine like Jim Price
with a mustache?
I could just grow my leg hair out.
Oh my God. Wait, what happened to Emily? She's gone.
Anyways,
I'm going to continue to ask you the questions.
Good.
Your dream event to ride at someday.
Dream event. Check. Did it. It was Kentucky.
Besides Kentucky.
I am very excited to go to Rebecca Farm.
That's a good one.
I have always wanted a reason to go.
Me too.
I have a reason to go. So I'm going.
Meet me there.
I drove the northern route across the country a couple of years ago, and it was just the most incredible experience being out in that part of the country. It's like being in a completely different part of the world, it feels.
It's going to be a 22-hour drive for me, and I'm like,
oh my God.
Key up the playlist, get the audiobook, I'm ready.
Listen to our podcast.
I will say I haven't been a big podcast person, but then when you guys take me on Facebook on the video, I was like, what is this?
And I was like, how do I get her attention? I know everybody's trying to get a piece of her right now. And I was so excited. She's never going to see this.
It got shared four to five times to me. Everyone's like,
I
was like, oh my God, what is happening?
You're like, oh, this lady who has this podcast is obsessed with me. Cool.
And I was like, no, she's going to find me on Facebook. Who is she?
Creep.
How do I say her name? Nima?
Exactly. All right, Emily, we're on question number 8.
So one word that describes your bond with Hale.
Chaotic.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Question number 9 is your favorite OTTB trait.
Ooh. And I think the unwillingness to give up. Just that gritty, I can do this no matter what.
You know, this last one, I feel like you're going to make me cry with this answer. Go on, Emily. What would your younger self say if she saw you today?
Oh my goodness. She would be like, you are such a badass. I cannot believe you did that. You are incredible. That's literally what she would say. She would be so proud of me. 14-year-old me in 4-H right now is geeking out about me right now.
She'd be like, can you imagine? I don't know if you've seen, there's a movie with Aubrey Plaza and it's her as a teenager and then she meets like her 39-year-old self and like they hang out together for 24 hours. It's so good. And yeah, I always think about that stuff. That's really sweet.
14-year-old me would ridiculously want my autograph, right? Because my God, you wrote at Kentucky. She would be asking how everything rode. And did you have the greatest time? And was it so fun? And did you hear the crowds? Did you see the crowds? Oh my God, why are you wearing the color pink?
Yeah. Excuse me, were you a pink person when you were 14?
I was not. I was big into yellow at the time. So don't ask. I don't know. But oh my gosh. 14-year-old me or 10-year-old me would just be so awestruck that I went and did it.
I love it. Well, like, I'm sure that Hale is having a well-deserved vacation, but what's next for the two of you? And can we look for you at Maryland this fall?
So next up for us is we're going to go just run around Seneca Horse Show and just pop around an intermediate, just something that feels really easy coming back, which saying easy and intermediate in one sentence feels insulting to myself because I love going intermediate and it took me 16 years to get there. So when I say pop around an easy intermediate, I'm hurting my own feelings a little bit. But I want him to feel like the next outing is just like a piece of cake and I want him to come out of it feeling like a badass, which he never doesn't feel like a badass, but it's more I want it to be fun for us and easy because I do this because I enjoy it, not because I'm trying to make the team. So that's next. Then we're going to go to Rebecca Farm and we're going to run the three long because if I wait any longer to do a three long, I'm going to get run off with at it. So we need to get that out of the way. I would love to do the four short out there, but like I said, I have got to run a three long before those fences stop holding him, which has already happened. That was our last three short. He was like, "You don't even beg." And I was like, so we're going to run the three long out there. Haven't fully mapped out my whole summer looking at the three long at Maryland, but I would like to get another four short in because we would like to end the season on a four long.
Yeah.
So we'll potentially do that at Terra Nova or somewhere else. So we don't quite have it all figured out yet. Kentucky was the big kahuna. And then I'm like finally getting my life back on track and my lesson and everything. And then I'm like finally getting my life back on track and figure out my lesson schedule and everything. So I haven't quite mapped out my whole summer yet and trying to like with my husband, I don't know. So we don't have it all figured out quite yet, but you will definitely see us in our bright blazing pink at definitely more guys. We will be hard to miss.
Ellie, where's the best place for listeners to find you and follow along with your journey?
Little Hale has his own Instagram, but he has his own Instagram because my personal one got extremely overwhelmed. Team Hale, And you can find us on Instagram and I let people know what we're up to. He does have a Facebook page too. I'm not as good at staying up to date on that. Same thing, Team Hale, So you can find us there. Don't try to go on my personal socials. I try to keep those for friends and family and when I go out.
Podcast ladies.
Creepers on podcasts. I just try to, make sure that I have.
Of course, yeah.
I don't want to say a separate life, but where I can just be Allie Kuhn, normal person, not a person who relies on horses to make her money. Which we all know it doesn't make us money, but it's a lie. It's a lie I tell myself. Let me have that. So you can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. Framed Equestrian on Instagram. She shares a lot of stuff about us. So probably find stuff with her. So find us there.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. We can't wait to cheer you on for many more pink-powered rides. And I do have one final question. What is one word that you'd use to describe an OTTB?
Oh, my gosh. Driven.
That's driven. I don't think anyone said that before.
I think so. I like
driven. Because an OTTB, even if they're doing something you don't want them to do, they are doing it with 100%.
Like breaking the cross ties or
breaking
just
the cross ties or like the paddock. The ones that come out of the gate and they just stop and they're like, I'm not doing it. They're not doing it at all. And I don't care how much that jockey hits them, they're not doing it. And they are driven to do what they want, when they want, how they want. And you better get on board with that. So they are driven to do whatever they're doing that makes them happy. They're going to do it 100% of the time. So driven.
I love it. Thank you, Ellie, so much. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of OTTB on Tap. If you're not already following Ellie and Hale, go fix that right now. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love it if you left us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Facebook. And don't forget, if you leave a review, we will send you some OTTB on Tap stickers as a thank you. You can connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok and get in touch with interview suggestions or episode ideas anytime at OTTBontap.com. We always love hearing from you.
Cheers.